Welcome everyone to our webinar. My name is Jonathan Friebert. I'm a Director of External Affairs in U.S. Government Affairs here at Microsoft. And I know we have a few new people joining us today who may not know about the Voices for Innovation program, which I manage. So I'm just going to do just a very brief introduction about VFI. Then I'll talk about an intro to the issue at hand, and then introduce Frank Torres, who will be our guest presenter today. So for those of you who don't know, Voices for Innovation, it's a Microsoft-supported community that I manage. We are focused on public policy issues that impact the IT sector. It's open and free to anyone who wants to join and participate in it. We do webinars on topics such as this one about once every 6 to 8 weeks. And then we have opportunities for you to engage with elected officials through some of our digital channels, such as writing letters on issues that you care about. So it's a great community to participate in. If we can mute phones, please. Everyone hear me? Okay. So it's a great community to participate in. I encourage you, for those of you who are joining us for the first time, to check us out and participate more. So let me just start by introing the issue here. So as some of you may know, Microsoft is currently engaged in a legal challenge to the U.S. government's demand that we turn over customer emails stored in our data center in Ireland. So the U.S. government is arguing that the emails stored in the cloud are business records, not personal information, and thus do not have the same legal protections of private communications. The government is also asserting that it has the authority to access emails stored anywhere in the world. So this issue, as you can imagine, has significant ethical and business implications. So just a very direct implication is that people will only use technology if they trust it. So for those on the call who are selling cloud services, or for customers or consumers that use cloud services, obviously the implications of the outcome of this case could have a chilling effect on those who are trying to sell those cloud services. But it also has broader questions. And there are three that I just wanted to present just to think about as Frank presents here. So first, should personal information stored digitally have the same privacy protections that analog information stored on paper has today? Second, do Fourth Amendment protections extend to cloud-based records and require the government to obtain a search warrant? And then third, can the U.S. assert search authority outside of U.S. borders? And then can countries assert the same search authority of cloud providers within U.S. borders? So these are just some of the many questions that this case presents. And so we're really lucky to have with us today Microsoft Senior Counsel Frank Torres to help us sort through all of this. Frank is an 11-year veteran at Microsoft, and he's based in Washington, D.C. He's also one of our leading experts on privacy issues for the company as a point person for us on this legal challenge. So again, as I said, we're lucky to have him with us today. As you can imagine, Frank is very busy with everything going on. But Frank, I wanted to turn it over to you. And again, I ask that you can IM in any questions and save your questions till Frank is done. So Frank, floor is yours.
Great. Thank you, Jonathan. And thank you, everybody, for joining on this mid-August day. As Jonathan laid out, this is a case, a challenge that we brought in the Southern District of New York against a warrant that was issued back in December, seeking information about one of our consumer customers. When we did our due diligence, we found that this customer's data was actually located in Ireland, in our data center there. We typically, in this day and age of the cloud, we try to localize where we provide service to our customers for latency reasons, which is essentially, increasing efficiencies and just making a better result for our customers. So once we learned that in the face of existing laws and some good constitutional questions out there about the need for warrants in getting information from customers, we challenged what the government sent us seeking this information. The case is winding its way through the courts. But before I get into some background, I'd like to set the scene. Then I'll discuss the background, get into the potential for some significant impact to U.S. businesses, both big and small. I will also talk as Jonathan started to lay out about the trust issues, what other countries may be doing in reaction to the situation and potential solutions. So why don't I start off actually by setting the scene, just to give you an idea of the atmospherics. And as Jonathan said, I'm based here in DC. I've worked on privacy issues for quite some time now. And it's interesting. It's an interesting and challenging time as the government tries to sort out its role in all of this. Even before the Snowden revelations, there was a lot of discussion going on and some legislation introduced to talk about the government access to email records and record stored in the cloud, really. It was recognized that the law that was passed that dealt with electronic communications was done so in 1986. It didn't contemplate the cloud, didn't contemplate a lot of the services that are being provided today by companies to their customers. And so, questions came in about, are these business records, are they not business records, how do these things get handled? There was several court decisions, the most notable called the Warshak decision, in which the Sixth Circuit said that their finding was that emails required a warrant if the government wanted access to the content. Flash forward a few years, and after a lot of discussion amongst the industry and some of the civil society groups, it was decided that we'd pursue changes to the law just to make sure that we codify that decision. So that's hanging out there. Then we have the Edward Snowden revelations that talked about the way government uses surveillance.
Hey Frank, we lost you. Something happened.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, there you go. Are you
Sorry.
there? Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So I was sorry about that, guys. I was just laying the. I'm not sure exactly what happened. My computer muted. We've got the EPCA reform. We've got the Snowden revelations, attempts to change the law there. Most recently we have the Riley decision by the Supreme Court that said. When the law enforcement tried to access information on somebody's cell phone during that they obtained during an arrest, the court said, you can't just obtain that. You need to go get a warrant. That this stuff that's on the cell phone, cell phones, a lot of times the thing that they're used least for is actually making telephone calls. They're used as people's personal storage devices or access to their information on the cloud. This stuff is personal. It goes to people's lives. It might be outside of the scope of the actual arrest. And so you need a warrant. There's some sort of extra level of protection. So then we've got the case of, in, you know, this isn't necessarily typical to Microsoft. You've got law enforcement coming to a company like Microsoft wanting to execute a warrant. And in this case, we decided to push back and to challenge it on a couple of different grounds. First of all, we said that because the data is located in Ireland, that a warrant doesn't have extraterritorial reach. In other words, you know, if you compare it to the physical world, if you will, the United States, law enforcement couldn't go to court, get a warrant, hop on a plane, fly to Dublin, go into a bank and try to get access to someone's safe deposit box there. That's typically not how it works. Congress didn't intend for warrants to have that extraterritorial reach. The courts have ruled that if Congress did intend for that, they have to say it explicitly, and they simply haven't. And then we also raised some constitutional questions as well, because the government was arguing, as Jonathan said, that the content of our customers' emails were actually business records. And we said, no, we kind of have a pretty good understanding of what records of are ours of concerning our business. And again, in this cloud-based era where we are trying to encourage people to use the internet and go online and store their, you know, materials and send emails and use all the great, you know, products and services that, you know, companies can provide to make people's lives better, that actually that stuff is the individuals and not the companies. And so we don't think it's right, and we don't think the court decision, especially in Riley, supports the government's position that email content of emails are business records. And so we said, look, if you look at the Fourth Amendment, requiring some sort of due process, before you can execute searches and seizures, that, you know, clearly this is something that requires a warrant. And then, okay, so you issued us a warrant, but it has this extraterritorial reach that Congress didn't intend. So government, you're in kind of a quandary. We think on these two grounds that the court should rule in our favor. At the same time, we realized that, you know, this has become, you know, so we made that argument before the magistrate and lost. We then made the arguments in the Southern District of New York just a week or so ago. The judge, in a surprising move, actually ruled from the bench, against us, essentially accepting the government's position that, we should turn over these records. The government did agree to a stay while the case winds its way through the courts, and now we're appealing to the Second Circuit. We fully expect that the court will accept the case and hear it probably sometime in February. In the meantime, we'll be filing briefs. The government will file their briefs. We already have several companies who have filed amicus briefs, AT&T and Verizon, Apple and Cisco, a civil society group, EFF, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, the Business Software Alliance filed a joinder letter supporting the Apple-Cisco brief. We think that the Center for Democracy and Technology, some other groups will be filing briefs in the Second Circuit, and we think that other companies will join some of the briefs that will be filed by the same companies that filed originally. So it's gotten, the case has gotten increased interest for the principles on which it stands for and the questions that it raises about the reach of the government into, and the process that needs to be followed, and the constitutional questions raised by the government seeking information from in this new era of technology and what it all means. And so, you know, the case is important from a business perspective, And Jonathan, you know, started to lay this out. I mean, certainly if you have customers or are looking to grow your business abroad, depending upon the outcome of the case, could have a real chilling effect on you know, either maintaining customers or acquiring new ones, if the notion is that, and we've already heard this ourselves from some government officials and some businesses, that they're very reluctant to either advise their governments or the companies that are located in their countries or their citizens to do business with U.S. companies, you know, not just in the you know, aftermath of the Snowden revelations, but you know, if this case isn't resolved in a good way, then you know, that what they're telling us is that they couldn't advise that customers in their country do business with any U.S. company, and you know, that's we hear that over and over again, and it's has a very chilling effect. And you know, I know we have a lot of people on the call. One has to wonder, you know, if you that the hope is in working with through the case, and it really has become a test case, that the policymakers actually, you know, take a look at how best, what they can do to help resolve the issue. So we are looking at potential legislation. We are looking at what the administration could do. We'll see how the court, what the court finds. I mean, certainly, you know, this has become a question of trust, consumer trust, customer trust, both at the enterprise level and you know, for consumer customers. It's also problematic, and we've already seen this happen, that other countries are taking action to almost mimic what the U.S. is arguing in the case, and that's, you know, the most recent example is the United Kingdom, that passed a law rather quickly. I think it took them 4 days to pass a law that says their law enforcement ought to have extraterritorial reach as well. Now, they haven't done anything with it yet. We think that, you know, since the EU may have some serious concerns about the law, but you know, if the U.S. government is saying that they can have a reach wherever they want in the world to pull data, then why can't other countries like the U.K. say that they have this extraterritorial reach as well? And you know, what will that do, not just to the notions of rules of laws and existing treaties that exist to actually facilitate the sharing of this sort of data that we have with many countries? You know, the implications could be pretty broad for U.S. companies and the way we operate. I mean, imagine a foreign government executing a warrant on your company for customer data, you know, without going through, you know, kind of a regular process. And there are processes set up. There are multilateral treaties that have been created to facilitate law enforcement obtaining information, and the process is, you know, in this case, the law enforcement agency seeking this data could have gone to their counterparts in Ireland and said, we would like to get this data. You know, it's held in, you know, Microsoft informs us that it's held in their data center there. We want to make sure we follow Irish law in this case, and could you help us get this data? And that there's a process to set that up. You know, the alternative is, you know, in this case, it's, you know, which law do we, you know, some of which law do we violate? Do we violate the Irish law, or do we violate U.S. law by not complying? And so we brought this case. In addition to legislation, Jonathan, I don't know if you want to go into, now's the right time to go into some of the alternatives that or some of the options that we've talked about for, you know, activity. Certainly,
Well, look, wait, maybe, Frank, what we could do now, there are a couple of questions that came in, and maybe this is a good time to sort of answer questions about, the issue at hand, and then we can go. So can you see the questions that are coming in?
Let me see if I can get the.
And if not, I'll read them to you.
Okay, I just got him. Okay.
Okay. So why don't we start with that first question. Would the U.S. approach only apply, and I'll read it for those who are on the phone. Would the U.S. approach only apply to U.S. companies or also European companies with U.S. representation? So could an EU hoster with U.S. representation be presented with the same requirement to hand over data based only on a U.S. warrant?
That is a good question. I believe that if a company does have a U.S. presence, that you subject to U.S. jurisdiction and therefore could be subject to being given one of these warrants. I can confirm that and get back to you, but I believe if there is a U.S. presence, that you could be subject to these warrants.
Okay. Second question. In general, what's Microsoft's policy on notifying a customer if a warrant is issued?
So this is a really good question, and it's one that especially in light of the current environment, poses a challenge. If it's an enterprise customer, we do, unless the customer itself is the subject of the warrant, that we have said that we will push back and fight for the ability to let that customer know. It gets a little bit it's so that we would go back to the government and say, hey, you issued the warrant to us. You really should be going to for information from company X that we may be having because they're, we're providing their cloud services. You really ought to go to them. And so we have said that we will fight those warrants. If it's a consumer customer, if you will, it gets a little bit more tricky because, if it's, a criminal, you don't want to be going notifying the criminal that, there's this warrant out there. So that gets a little bit more challenging. But in the enterprise space, we have said that we will fight to notify those customers unless the customers themselves are the subject of the investigation.
Okay. Is Frank, offhand, do we put those policies online somewhere if people wanted to access that? Is it
I believe so, and I apologize, I don't have
okay?
the link, but.
I can follow. We can follow up after the call with the link to people. I can. I'm going to send a follow-up email. Okay. So a couple other good questions coming in, and for those on the phone, I'll just remind you, star six to unmute if you want to ask a question. But again, please stay muted. We have a lot of people on the line. But once I get through a couple of these questions, if you want to unmute, feel free to do so. Next question. How is your Fourth Amendment argument construed in light of the IRS's new ability to breach privacy of American citizens' banking affairs in foreign countries, for example, Switzerland, to expose U.S. tax evaders? Is international law or domestic law supposed to control these matters? I'm not sure if that's a different set of issues there or not, but don't know. Yeah.
So another really good question, but I'll be honest, I'm not familiar with what the IRS is doing and how what process they might have gone through in order to get that ability. I would surmise, though, that they, excuse me, probably worked out an agreement with Switzerland and the other countries where they may be able to get access to this data through a treaty or other process to allow them to do that. Otherwise, I don't think those countries would allow that. But again, that's something that I'm just not so familiar with how that came about. Certainly, what we would argue is in this case that there is a treaty that the United States has with Ireland, and we think that that process should be followed. That's the one of the MLATs. And so instead of issuing the warrant to us to get data from our data center in Dublin about a particular customer, that the United States government should have gone through the MLAT process to their counterparts in Ireland and requested this data, or requested the data through that process, and so that we could ensure that Irish law was being followed.
Yeah, and so maybe you're saying maybe through treaty with Switzerland, for example, that enables them to do that. There might be another process, is what you're saying, right? Frank?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Great. Another question, and this is a question, by the way, Frank. I've heard from a number of partners and a number of Microsoft folks as well. We talked a little bit about this at the partner conference in DC last month, but I'm going to ask it of you, and I'm going to take a short answer before you answer it. So in Germany, we have a lot of companies which are afraid to use Microsoft's cloud service because of the actual judgments. Microsoft, quote, Microsoft has to share data out of Europe to U.S. authorities, end quote. Do you have an action plan to communicate this to the customer or a solution? So a number of our colleagues, Frank's and my colleagues in legal and corporate affairs here at Microsoft, are actually doing just that. We have worked with them. There are actually a couple of sessions on this at the partner conference talking about sort of what's the Microsoft story, what, you know, kind of what Frank was touching on a little bit, what we share, what we don't share, you know, that sort of thing. So this is information, and actually for a future webinar, we're actually going to cover this topic with Frank's and my colleagues in this area. And this is something actually that we've been very interested in getting that story told about sort of what we do, what Microsoft does, what we share, what we don't share. So Frank, I don't know if there's anything you want to add
To give some flavor, and again, you know, I know I spent a couple of minutes talking about the kind of the environment, you know, from a U.S. perspective, and one of the reasons for that is actually, I'm glad you asked this question. It's because Microsoft has heard loud and clear, you know, concerns about, you know, this sort of warrant, this sort of government surveillance that we now know is going on. And the impact that it's having, not just in terms of customer trust, not just in the United States, where it's certainly a concern, but also abroad. You know, and we hear time and time again, and not just in Germany, that there are really significant, serious concerns, and legitimate ones in light of the revelations about whether or not companies and customers can trust not just Microsoft but any U.S. company. And so because of that, you know, we're supporting some pretty significant reforms to U.S. government's U.S. surveillance laws that would start to not just allow companies to be more transparent about the sort of requests that they receive from law enforcement and national security agencies, but also limit the collection of data that our law enforcement agencies can do. We are also, you know, starting to look at other avenues that perhaps the administration itself can take to rein in this sort of surveillance that goes on in ways that still allow our agencies that are tasked with, you know, protecting us, not just here, but in other countries, to do their job, because there are bad people and organizations out there, but at the same time, provide some protection for companies from, you know, essentially being subjected to surveillance that's unwarranted. So we are working very hard here in the U.S. to create a much better environment with clear rules of how surveillance happens. And again, you know, that's another reason why we brought this case, is because there needs to be an understanding and some clarity around so that we all know, both here and abroad, kind of what the rules are if the government wants access to this data. And if there's a process in place, they need to follow it, and it needs to be clear. They need to go through, you know, they need to be respectful of the laws of other countries before they go out and seek this data. So we are working hard, and as Jonathan said, we'll be providing more kind of around this as we move forward. A great question. Thank you.
Thanks. So any questions from those who called in? Again, star six should get you off mute. If there are any questions, I'll just pause for a moment to see if anybody wants to ask a question who's on the phone or who's on the link who wants to ask a question. Just please identify yourself before asking a question. Okay. Hearing none. All right. So what we wanted to talk about now is just ways to take some action and stay informed on this issue in particular. As Frank mentioned, you know, we're sort of at the beginning of this, even though there, you know, there is a court case. He mentioned, you know, there could be actions in Congress around this issue. One thing that we're starting to do with VFI, and I put the link into the IM, and for those who are on the call, if you go to www.voicesforinnovation.org, you'll see on our top navigation bar, privacy statement of support. So we're trying to collect names of people who support kind of what we were just talking about here, which is, you know, lending your name to this statement of support. For now, we're just trying to get people, you know, in our database, frankly, who we know are interested in this. Certainly showing up for the call shows that you're interested. But if you want to take a next step on this and sign this statement of support, one, we'd really appreciate it. And then two, you know, there's going to be other sort of efforts around this going forward. And this is, you know, by signing the statement of support, it's a great way just to stay informed. It lets me know that, you know, you're interested in staying informed and involved on this as this unfolds. You know, one thing that we may consider down the line is, you know, getting the voice of the IT community, in particular small businesses in the IT community, who do have concerns about this. I see Nakia. Thank you for that comment, by the way, and I am talking about how concerned you are. I know the services that you sell are cloud services. So, I mean, anyone who is selling cloud services or using cloud services, I think, you know, rightfully is going to be concerned about how this unfolds. So again, I think taking that, you know, next step and signing the statement of support is just a great way to let us know where you're at on this issue. And then Frank had, I mean, there's a couple of other sort of other steps that we're going to talk about as this unfolds. There may be opportunities if you want to go, you know, file an amicus brief or participate in an amicus brief. I mean, that's something we could talk about down the line. Again, with Congress, and Frank, you know a little bit more about this, what's going on in Congress with potential legislation, but we're definitely we're going to want to facilitate the small business IT voice through VFI on that. And Frank, I don't know if there's anything else you want to mention in particular on Congress or on the amicus.
No, I think you covered it. You know, on Congress, you know, we are still exploring what an appropriate legislative fix will look like. I think once we have that, we can certainly send out you know, information to this group. And then, you know, if a letter is in order, you know, that would be great. In addition, as Jonathan said, you know, we do expect the same companies that filed an amicus earlier, so that's AT&T, Verizon, Apple, Cisco filed a joint brief. You know, the Business Software Alliance, we expect to file a brief. I think that there could be some others that you could either sign on to those briefs or, you know, do a supportive letter to the court on this issue. Again, you know, it's interesting now that it's reached the Second Circuit, it really becomes, you know, a smack in the middle, you know, question about the policies that are in place or that ought to be in place surrounding this. And so I think we'll expect to see a lot of interest by academics, other NGOs, and those just interested in kind of the legal implications here. Right. So you'll have lots of opportunities and choices, if you will, on this.
And the other thing I would add too, and this is something for those who do participate in VFI, you know, we think of VFI as a feedback loop for us. So, you know, we like to certainly, you know, talk about some of the issues and how we think about them, but certainly you all offer a broad array of perspectives on this. So it's helpful to both Frank and myself to hear your thoughts, your feedback, you know, again, continue to raise any questions with us. So that's another way I think you could help is just, you know, help spread the word certainly about what's going on this issue, but also give us feedback as well about what you're hearing, anything that doesn't make sense, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and certainly as we move forward, if we, you know, if folks have questions or if you know of forms or opportunities for us to discuss the case, you know, I could certainly do it. You know, Jonathan certainly knows enough, but we do have a number of people in the company that have been, you know, working on this issue. And so I'm sure we can find someone to be available for you.
Yep, I got a question from Donya. So, that's, you know, that's something, Donya, I could talk with you offline about. So again, thank you. I'm seeing people have already signed the statement of support. Really appreciate that. And Melanie, thank you again for your offer as well. Just so you know, Frank, Melanie Goss, Microsoft Princess, does a web-based radio show that has over 300,000 downloads. Per month, I believe. So Melanie is certainly someone we could talk with about this. So, per week. Thank you, Melanie. Per week. I don't want to under 300,000 per week. Thank you, Melanie. So you know, this is really great. I really appreciate all this. And again, you know, we will certainly keep you informed as things move forward on this.
Well, and just in closing out here, I guess, again, you know, thank you all for participating in the call. I know it's easy to get into the weeds. So what I will leave you with is this, and I think many of you probably hopefully have already gotten this, you know, that the you know, technology is moving very quickly for all the right reasons. In all the right ways. And, you know, the laws and some of the practices we're finding haven't kept up with what's actually happening out there. And so as more companies do have customers abroad, you are storing people's data, there's some important issues that need to be resolved. And again, that's one of the reasons why we brought this case is, you know, somebody needed to, you know, raise the flag and force, you know, the discussion around these sorts of important issues that, you know, really could, you know, impact businesses, both big and small. So thank you for participating.
Thank you. All right. And James, I'll follow up with your question offline because we are just about at time. So thank you again, everyone, for participating today. Really appreciate it. Thanks for all your great questions. thank you again for all your great support, and in particular, Frank, thank you for spending time with the VFI community today. Really appreciate it. This is going to be a really important issue going forward, and we're going to keep everyone involved. So thanks again, Frank. Thanks again for everyone for taking time out of their day. Really appreciate it. All right. Bye.